Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are, another day, another dollar, or lack thereof, May 31st, 2011, to discuss the machinations of the thing known as the stock market.
Yep. It's sell in May, go away was the right adage, and it worked this time perfectly. Not that you want to always follow those kind of things, but you know, usually the summertime lull, the lack of volume, lack of players, people just waiting to go to the island and to go on vacation seems to be continually showing up in stock market returns. Plus, you're in the middle of the end of earnings season, so May was a down month for the U.S. markets and most of the markets.
Is there some sort of a saying similar to sell in May, go away for June?
Invest your money in June, it will eventually mushroom.
Yeah.
How's that?
I guess not.
I don't know of one. I will tell you that like Stevie Cohen and a few other guys have been known to just pack it in during some times of years, and maybe the last quarter, I think a couple of years back, and you know, they just kind of like just lay off the trading, which is probably why most people, you know, want to think about whether or not they want to invest if they're investing aggressively in some of these months, because they do have, I mean, I think, what is it, October, April, a couple of the worst months out there.
Right, unless you're in the middle of a raging bull market or the thing's collapsing and you can get on the downside.
Yeah, exactly. But the
which tends to happen, by the way, historically, time after time in October, and there have been some May collapses, March, April, May collapses, but those are pretty rare. It's mostly almost always October. You know, if things are really going to tank, it begins around October. It's weird.
I don't know what that is. I mean, can you look at April? April's one of these months that has, we know that April is, and October is also the 6 months, so there may be some reasonable consequence here and relationship. But April is the number one month for, it was for many years, CD deposits, CDs coming due, deposits into different accounts because of IRAs. Hmm. And 6 months later, a lot of times you had the 6 month renewals on your CDs in years past when you got a decent rate, and you would see a lot of money moving around the markets as well. So I'm not sure if that has anything to do with anything, but we know there's a lot of money being liquefied in those months.
So what's going on this week?
Well, let's see.
I've been kind of out of it. I haven't noticed anything interesting. I don't know.
Oh, boy, I got a lot of stuff that I thought was really interesting this week.
Okay.
I think, well, first of all, almost, I could probably say since the last time we talked, very close to 100% of the economic reports we saw from the U.S. were all horrible. I don't think there was one that I could recall that was like, oh, that's good. That's a good number. The PMI numbers.
Yeah, they were all pretty bad. I did notice that.
Yeah, that was horrible.
Yeah.
And just as they get worse, it's almost like, you know, the worse they are, the better maybe the stock market will be, because the idea that QE3 is around the corner. So that was kind of interesting. There was something that I thought that, if you didn't pick up on it, I have it here, that I thought you would think was just outrageously, immensely apropos. And that's that this new rage of companies that are delisting from the U.S. markets.
Yeah, I did notice this. Of course, I think you even sent me a note on it sometime last week, because it reflects on my thoughts about Sarbanes-Oxley.
Right, exactly.
Which is one of the reasons they're doing this. And I think it's going to continue until they just repeal that bill. It has done nothing. It didn't save us from the collapse of 2008. It was useless. So what's the point of it besides the fact that it screws up our markets and it's giving people the opportunity to do their IPOs anywhere but here? Stunned by the people doing IPOs here. It's amazing to me, especially small operations like LinkedIn.
Which is getting smaller by the day.
Well,
stock is down again.
Yeah, well, the stock is doomed. But besides that, it's like I'm stunned that, because I was told by some venture capitalists that the go-to number in sales is $400 million before it's worth your while to do an IPO in the U.S. of A because of Sarbanes-Oxley. Because it has an overhead cost of around 4% of your net.
But you know what? If you could do an IPO and raise all sorts of ridiculous numbers, who cares what it costs?
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, you can kind of take it out of the IPO money. You can cash out is what you're
right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Saying.
Take $1 billion, put it on the side and pay all the...
Yeah, but this is not what it's about necessarily. Right. I mean, some of these guys, would like Amazon, when they went public, they weren't doing it to cash out.
Right. But now, so what's happening is that Millicom, major telephone company, if you will, is now surprised last, I think Thursday or Friday, that they're pulling out. And one of the other things that's happening is that it's very timely because it's much easier today. Maybe it's not easy, but it's much easier today to trade stocks on different exchanges than it was, let's say, 5 years ago. So where you had to have a presence in a U.S. market if you really want to have exposure to some of these companies, you didn't have to have it as much anymore because you could trade it on various pink sheets or you could trade it on other markets. And a lot of brokers right now have the opportunity to allow you to invest on other markets except, you know, aside from just the U.S.
Actually, I'm surprised it hadn't I think it had begun a while back, but I'm surprised it's not at full tilt right now because it's all computerized. A lot of these markets are just as reliable as the U.S. market. And I'm actually surprised that it stuns me that a lot of people that, because of the Sarbanes-Oxley again, are even in the U.S., one of the U.S. exchanges.
Well, like, you know what? I think it's a – we could call it a tax on – showing that you are a real company, you know, because being on a U.S. exchange, supposedly, you know, New York Stock Exchange, maybe some of the NASDAQ, but New York Stock Exchange, for example, it has a little bit of
the cash. The word you're looking for is cachet.
Yeah, cachet.
I think those days are over.
Maybe. Could be. I mean, but where else would you want to trade? I mean, you could go on a German, on the DAX.
Well,
maybe
you have a bunch of stocks that are in China, aren't they? Or there's still ADRs available. I don't think those are subject to... Toyota, I don't believe, is it on the New York Stock Exchange? I thought it was a...
Yeah, you could play... Well, it's on an ADR.
It's an ADR. Well, that's different.
Right.
So they don't have to, you know, pony up to Sarbanes-Oxley, even though the Japanese were thinking of copying the bill for some stupid reason.
Why is it that it's always the bad things that people copy?
It's baffling. Well, I don't think they know what's going on. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that you know, somebody tells them it's good. I mean, when the Sarbanes-Oxley bill was passed, everybody thought it was the greatest thing since sliced. Great, because it'll protect the public, when all it did was protect the accountants. Mm-hmm. It didn't protect the public from the 2008 collapse. It didn't protect the public from a lot of stuff.
And this was post-Enron. That's what we're supposed to
It's all because of Enron. And in fact, if you reverse engineer Sarbanes-Oxley and put Enron into play, it won't do anything.
Right.
It doesn't do anything.
It was supposed to also have the effect of greater transparency. I think there was also something about derivatives in there. Maybe there wasn't there, but there was that whole genre of laws that were passed at that time, all about, you know, stopping the derivatives, you know, stopping all this side pocket money from off balance sheet financing. Remember that?
Yeah, vaguely.
Well, that was the big issue, was the off balance sheet funding, or the off balance sheet accounting that was done by Enron, that you couldn't really find it if you looked at the basic Enron balance sheets or the cash flow statements. Everything was off balance sheet, and all these other crazy places that
they could
were
have continued
routing
to do that, and the guys would have been arrested. But
yeah, but they did that now. The banks did that. The banks did.
Yeah,
that,
the banks did. Right, exactly.
What a joke!
No, this thing has got to go. It's just it's ruining the. I think the reason that we're in a downturn the way we are is because of that law, and a lot of other people feel the same way. But it seems as though I don't know what group of people. I think people that are very naive about the way the economic. About how corporate financing works, are kind of, you know, I think it's they see it as consumer protection when it doesn't protect anybody.
Yeah,
consumer protection theater. Go on.
If anybody knows anybody that's an expert in Sarbanes-Oxley, either pro or con, but maybe on the other side, because we've been always nailing it.
Now, you won't find anybody on the other side. I have never found anybody on the other side.
Well, what about Sarbanes or Oxley?
Those guys retired.
Mm. Well, oh well. So the other thing that happened, back to government for a second and what they're doing, they passed a bill. Your state, your wonderful state of California, passed a bill tonight that's going to require online retailers such as Amazon to collect sales taxes on internet purchases by state residents. Now, one of the things I didn't understand was that in the bill there was a discussion about that the retailer has to have a physical presence in the state to collect the state sales taxes. So – does that apply to Amazon? Does Amazon, do they have facilities in California?
Mm-mm.
So how do they even reference Amazon in this discussion?
I don't know. I looked this over myself. I haven't figured it out. Maybe they're trying to push the notion that an online store operating in California is in California physically.
So like a Best Buy, if you buy it through Best Buy in California, and since Best Buy has stores in California, you'll have to pay taxes there, which is usually the case anyway. I don't understand how they're trying to get at the Amazons of the world and all that, how that even makes any sense if they're not going to – the whole point of an internet tax-free because they didn't have a presence anywhere. It's only going to be a small portion of stores.
This goes back to the mail order days. I mean, they've been trying to collect money for people who buy stuff by mail order. You know, like,
oh, remember those days? You bought it out of state and had it shipped in on a trip?
You still do that.
Yeah.
I buy a lot of stuff from Amazon, and I'll be darned if I'm going to spend 10% on top of it. I mean, the sales tax in California is 10%.
Wow.
It's ridiculous. I mean, so in other words, instead of paying, $20, I have to pay $22. And for what? They're collecting $2, but they're not benefiting Amazon. I mean, the reason I always understood you had sales tax was that I have a store in town, and there's goods and services provided to my store by the local authorities and the state and everybody else, you know, highways, roads.
Police,
the whole thing. Yeah. And so the sales tax goes for that. But if I'm out of state, you collect money and what for what?
For it passing through. I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's just passing through.
Well, anyway, this has been argued forever.
Well, the best line of it that I thought was, I mean, talk about really, I guess, talking right out of your ass, but this Assemblyman Charles Calderon, he says, if you don't support this bill, you support tax evasion and you're anti-business.
How is this anti-business?
I have no idea.
Any taxes that are – I mean, if you support any taxes, you're anti-business. So what he's saying is just the opposite of what's true.
I know. Isn't that weird?
Yeah. Well, he's just another fake.
I think the right word is blowhard.
Douchebag. Let's call it what it is.
Nice. Nice. Google announces the Google Wallet, which is the near-field communications payment system.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about that, I guess, is this is really – Google at its best. They're not making any money on it, on any of the transactions or anything like that. But rather, they're going to utilize some either coupons or offerings inside of the app, I guess, or inside of the system. So once again, Google is making a potentially great product, but no, they're not making any money on it. Although maybe they'll charge some of the people involved with it, but they're not making any direct money from the people using it. I find it amazing how much Google does for free and how much money they make.
I don't know. For one thing, I don't like the NFC anyway.
I've read about it a couple times.
Yeah. I don't like these kinds of things because people walk by and the next thing you know, they've got your data, which I think will be happening for sure, especially around here. Google does a lot of this stuff hoping to see what, you know, they invent it, they put it into play, and then they try to see, you know, on the back end what they can do to make money, which is very unusual.
Yeah. So PayPal's now suing them because two of the execs that were at PayPal went over to Google, but yet Google was, I guess they were in negotiations or talking with PayPal about this whole thing, and PayPal was going to be the provider for a lot of this, and then they just shut that down after these two execs left and I guess maybe they're alleging stole their intellectual property.
It's very hard to make that case hold in the state of California. There's been too much precedent about people. If you quit a job, you should be able to find another job.
Right.
And so I think this is just bravado.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things, I mean, you talk about there wasn't that much that was exciting. How about that the hedge fund operator and activist investor Einhorn? Was one of the guys that he was the one arguing the case that Lehman was going to go belly up, okay, before it all happened, obviously. And everybody's like, what? What are you talking about? Well, he said Ballmer must go. Ballmer must go.
Yeah.
That he's a drag on the company. And the shares went up 2.5% on that comment. I thought that you can't get Microsoft to move worth anything. Nothing. You can't
fire the CEO, the stock goes up.
Yeah, that he's got a – Ballmer's got to be – really upset about that.
Plus, noticed.
Oh, well, he noticed. Yeah, he noticed because there was a response from the board.
Yeah.
So this wasn't small. This guy's serious. Einhorn owns a chunk of – I mean, not a chunk compared to things, but he owns a big piece of Amazon. When this guy, Einhorn, has plenty of money. When he buys something, he goes, I mean, heavy. And, you know, he's that's why he could be an activist investor, you know, and because he can shape the boards and all. So the board sent back at least or announced that they were very happy with Ballmer and nothing's changing. So this wasn't just a small time blogger saying this.
Yeah, I actually wrote a column on this and for MarketWatch. And I sided with Ballmer, but I've been doing that for a while. And because I don't see – I mean, the numbers are going – are well. I mean, the only thing that Ballmer doesn't bring to the party is excitement.
Right.
He brings sales and income, but apparently that's not good enough.
Nope. You need excitement. You need a new product. And you need a product that's going to be cutting edge before everybody else has it. That would probably be something that would be helpful.
Why?
I don't know. Why? So maybe let everybody else prove whether it works or not, then pick it up and try to steal it?
That's what they do.
They do that very well. Although the last number of these items didn't work so well. You know, there was a few articles. Harvard Business Review wrote a great piece on the second in phenomena, which is like you have a Home Depot, and then you have them doing all this thing. And all of a sudden you have Lowe's come in and just steal their thunder because they sit there and watch. Oftentimes it's from people that break away and open up the new company. And they get the best of the ideas and they utilize those. And then all of a sudden, you know, things kind of swing the other way. You would think that the second in opportunity for Microsoft is enormous, where they can really watch what's going on and then come up with something that's just terrific.
Well, they were notorious for second in, but not by bringing in something terrific, by just by basically bringing a decent idea on board and ruining the other company.
Yeah, they were hated for a long time.
Well, they're probably still not loved, but the second in, yeah, no, second in has been it's been discussed for years and years in Silicon Valley because of the notion that being first is great, and then there's way too much documentation that shows the second right. in is the one who
yeah, it's MySpace and Facebook. It's
well, actually,
it's,
you go back, that's not even second. I mean, you had a Live Journal, which actually had blog sites or something like the thing that AOL had. I can't remember the name, GeoCities, and then you had Live Journal, yeah. And then you had MySpace, which was a clone of Live Journal, and then you had Facebook, which was an improved version of. So you're third or fourth generation.
MySpace, I could never in a million years understand what was going on. I tried. I looked at the stuff. I was like, "What? This is just such drivel, and it's so confusing to look at."
It was just people that loved animated GIFs, I guess. I have no idea. I mean, I used to go on there and collect animated GIFs,
right?
Because all the classics were there. Cat running around the bottom, something glowing, you know, a mailbox opening and closing, you know, Homer Simpson popping out of a hole.
Right. Exactly. all right, let's go. Oh, so this was also interesting, I thought. The G7 is they decided that they're going to give $40 billion to Yemen and a few other Middle East countries that were successful, at least partially successful, in overthrowing their governments. And I was thinking about that. Wow, that's kind of interesting. I mean, where are we coming up with this money? Because we're a big piece of that. And then I started thinking, well, why are we doing that? You know, what is that? Is it a reward? Is it a fund to help them then create their democracy? And you know what it sounds like? It sounds like a bounty to me.
Bounty.
Doesn't it?
You mean it's okay, good work. Here's your money.
No, everybody look what we're doing here. Go throw over that bastard dictator.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You're setting a precedent for others to do the same. You know, you might get a few billion in it for you. You know, if you're the ruler. You know, you could score a couple billion off the top.
You don't think that people from those other countries would look at that and say, oh, man, look what we can get from this deal? I mean, all right, we'll have to work at it, but there's some real – it's not like we're going to be left in the lurch.
That's an interesting take. I would agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like especially
– a pre-bribe.
Yeah, it's a challenge. Hey, go do your thing. We'll give you some money in the back end. I think there's at least some kind of – underlying thought that would be the case. I think it is, at least. I mean, that's the way it seems to me. So, but they're still having all sorts of problems over there. Syria's still erupting, and Gaddafi's just, you know, he's going to be the new hanger-oner that never seems to get killed or whatever.
Yeah, I thought Obama, when he started this whole fiasco, said it would be a matter of days, not weeks. Now it's been months already.
Right. And then soon we're going to be, you know, looking back on this and discussing with
the
next.
Yeah, 5 years from now, it's going to be continuing. Right, this guy's going to die of old age.
Oh, boy. Yeah, and there was some announcement. There was a weird announcement that I saw cross today, and I didn't follow up on it. But something about how Goldman Sachs lost 98% of the Libyan – a part of a Libyan sovereign fund in the last couple of years due to bad investments. I mean, who's
really?
Who's going to challenge that?
So Goldman Sachs has a bunch of money from Libya. They invest it poorly and lose it all. And then we have this overturn situation, so they don't have to worry about paying it back.
Yeah.
Or they have to worry about responsibility. I guess they don't have to pay it back because it wasn't really, you know, anything. They just were managing it.
And who's going to get mad about that?
Well,
if
you've got
Gaddafi,
other things to be mad about. Yeah, you're right. Interesting.
You know, it's always, you know, that little piece that they put on there at the, you know, at the right time.
How does Goldman lose all that money when they make so much money for themselves?
I have no idea. And I have to look into this further, but this is – I saw this headline a few times today.
Hmm.
I'd have to, and it was definitely 98% because I had to do a double take on it. I thought that was an absurd amount.
98%. Sorry, we lost all your money. Oh, wait.
I mean, what did they,
no,
what did they do
we
in
have
that one account?
We have 2% left.
Yeah, I mean, what did they possibly do in that account? And by the way, if that's is that an exclusive situation? I mean, what about other places? They just that one account they lost all that money, and how's that possible?
It sounds like a scam.
Yeah, something's weird. I don't know. I got to look up and find out what that is. Anybody out there wants to check that out and maybe get back to us on that? That would be really great. So, but Greece has been in the news too. Greece is the market is all about Greece.
They don't really show much on American media the amount of rioting going on in Greece.
Yeah, it's insane because you have now the opposition party, which is saying, screw you, we're not giving up anything. And in fact, we want a tax cut. And the current head of Greece is saying, you know what, we'll do whatever we have to do, austerity measures, raising taxes, cutting here, so that we can get these loans because they can't get any money otherwise. You know, nobody's going to give them money at a reasonable rate. It's like 25% on their bonds. So everybody's nervous that Greece is going to go down somehow, pull out. I mean, today it's a constant flow of crap news that moves markets, and it's all around Greece right now. We have that last week there was some discussion that, oh, well, you know what? Greece isn't going to qualify, and now, you know, and all of a sudden markets go down and the euro gets slammed. And then today we hear Juncker says, oh, you know what? You know what? We think that we're going to move this out into June just to make sure that Greece has, in fact, done all the things they're supposed to do, which we've also heard that all of the different criteria that they were supposed to do a year later to meet the needs of the money they got the first time around, none of them were met. And then the markets go up because they're going to push it out a little bit into something. And then they talk about in a news alert today that absolutely not, there will not be a total restructuring, understand the wording there, of Greek debt.
Hmm.
So everybody's excited.
Of course, it should be reprofiling.
Yeah, but they said the word total.
Yeah,
this
total.
Is like, we see an update of this, we see an update of that, then of course it goes out. Then, this, I'm making this up, I mean, it's like update 495 at the end of the day. It's like China is going to buy Greece. But what's funny is, truth is stranger than fiction. Late in the day today, we saw that Greece is actually going to be selling some of their assets. And I've always said they should sell Santorini or something.
They should sell their islands.
Yeah.
And they should sell the Parthenon.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I'm sure there's buyers for that. And you can throw some great parties up there. You know, we get the Playboy Mansion.
Commercialize these things. Come on.
Playboy Mansion, Greece. You know, put one of those, you know, it would be great. Put one of those sandals resorts there.
Sandals.
sandals Greece. But now it's, you know, all of a sudden this happens, we see Greece is selling assets, everybody's all excited because that would mean that there's obviously the inside of that would mean that they're selling assets because they're forced to. And if they're forced to, it's because they're having to do something in order to get another bailout. Therefore that means they're getting another bailout.
Ah.
So everybody was all excited about that. The euro went flying high. Like up 1.2% at one point today.
Well,
so and that was all. Everybody was all excited about that, and I'm like, that's what you hear now. This is the fourth time we heard something today that contradicts the last thing.
Well, all I know is the euro's too high.
Yeah, 140. What is it? 144 now.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just, I think it was 141 and falling when we talked last week.
Yeah, I mean, so it's a three cent game, which is substantial.
I would think, yeah.
Yeah, so you know, the Obamacare issue. First of all, I guess it was, let me think, was it Senate or who was it? No, it couldn't have been Senate. Well, maybe it was Senate. In one of the houses tonight, they defeated a bill that would have raised the debt ceiling by a wide margin. So the Republicans are standing firm. They want further, further cuts and things, and the Democrats are standing strong on their side. They want to basically give away the farm, it seems. So first go around on raising the debt ceiling is a no-go. So we'll see what happens. But one of the things that's also happening is that the Obamacare is coming under attack by the Republicans. We know that. But one of the things that happened is that there was these waivers that are being given out to various companies that
mostly in Nancy Pelosi's district over here in San Francisco.
20% of all the waivers have been given out to people in her districts.
Yeah.
Some of them are very high-class restaurants.
Yeah.
I don't understand that at all. She's the one that said, don't read the bill. You don't need to read
it. We'll read it later.
Just pass it, and then you'll find out about what's inside of it. Yeah. And it's going to be good for everybody, and everybody should do it. And it was supposed to be a full, you know, everybody needs to be on board this thing because that's the only way it works. And meanwhile, there's waivers being given out all over the place by her. Seems to be a contradiction.
Eh, it's typical.
How's her following these days?
You know, well, the fact that she gives away these waivers, I mean, she's going to be reelected once again in the next 2 years.
Oh, so it's a political situation. For, yeah.
It's essentially it's like, let's set this thing up and then I can give away waivers, and it's like a payoff. I mean, no, I don't know why anyone hasn't seen through it as a payoff. It probably should be totally illegal.
So it's like,
why don't you just give money to people to vote for you?
Right, take it away, but I'm the good guy to give it back. Nice. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah,
she's
smart. She's 70 plus years old. And obviously, she's had a lot of Botox and facelifts.
Nice.
And she's not no dummy. I mean, she seems like one, sounds like one, but you know, she obviously is not.
Yeah. So Google, I don't know if you saw this story, but Google is starting to work on retinal studies to see in their ads what people are watching. Now, it's not – nobody worry. It's not like they could see through your computer now. You know, you have to it's a
there program. Used to be a website 10 years ago. This is not even close to being new. There used to be a website, as a matter of fact, that I unfortunately lost track of it, that isolated all the research done in this regard. This is an old-fashioned concept that began in the late 90s and was used extensively. And I'm amused as hell that Google got any ink for dredging the idea back up.
Well, the big thing is that they're going to utilize this, hopefully, to show how their ads are much more efficient.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah, well. You know, hey, we know that they're looking at this, and we know the rate of this, and we know that they, you know, design the ad to look like this with this thing moving around so that it'll grab the attention of the viewers.
The reason this fell off the radar, this idea, is because it turns out that there won't be you won't hear about it. This will be buried because it turns out that nobody's looking at any of these ads. Most people, I guess, their eye maps to the what was discovered a decade ago. That the eye seems to map the page and then only looks at the important items on the page and stops looking at ads after a few repetitious visits. And
I find myself, I actually am purposeful in my not clicking them.
Yeah, there's that element too. I mean, this is a real problem. They don't want to talk about it. So you will not hear any results from this, you know, new idea because it's already been gone over and it's turned out that the advertising on the internet is extremely problematic.
Yeah,
and Google's got nothing. They won't have anything to hang any research off of to prove that they do anything better than anyone else. So
as opposed to the efficiency of podcast advertising that we're aware of, and
that's why we stopped advertising. It doesn't
exactly.
Do anything.
So phones, what do you think about this? Once again, being brought out in the genre of saccharin and other things that are bad for you, is that your cell phone is now a possible carcinogenic.
Well, I'm surprised this hasn't happened already, but it looks as if the study, which is actually from a professor at the University of Utah, is going to be released later this month or later in June. And and everybody seems to be jumping on it now. So because nobody wanted to say anything, because the cell phone companies, I don't know if they bought everybody off or what, but you know, this is a, it's going to cause all kinds of issues because people don't, for one thing, the public as a whole doesn't know what radiation is. They don't know the difference between electromagnetic radiation, RF, and ionizing radiation. And so radiation thus is bad all around. And then the other thing is how much electromagnetic or RF radiation can the brain take at close proximity when you have a transmitter right up against your skull?
Right.
I always thought it was questionable. And I do see that, I think, I could be wrong, but it seems to me there's an awful lot of cases of brain cancer that had cropped up over the last decade that never, I don't remember when I was a kid ever even hearing about brain cancer.
Right.
So it's they got a problem on their hands.
I don't mean to be I don't mean to be snide, but what kind of cell phones were in your when you were a kid?
Well, no, I'm not referring to the fact that that actually proves my point. When I was a kid, there were no cell phones, and there was never any instances of brain cancer.
Okay.
I don't remember ever hearing of brain cancer until maybe 10 years ago, and it's all coincides with the advancement of cell phones and people who are on the cell phone constantly for extended periods of time. Yak, 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 yak.
I never heard of people falling off their bicycle and cracking their heads open, and nobody wore helmets when I was a kid, but now they all wear helmets. What does that mean? It's a small population I'm looking at.
I don't think people drove bikes to the extreme they do today.
Oh, really? Oh, all right.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I know what you're saying. You're trying to demean my associative data.
That's correct.
By bringing up some specious observation that I don't know about offhand.
Exactly.
I'm not. You. So you're on the cell phone all day? You're worried sick now? Is that the deal?
No. No. No, I'm not at all, as a matter of fact, but this is something that's come up so many times. You know,
it keeps cropping up. I think it's probably somewhat bogus, but there have been studies that show that if you're just on the phone for hours, you do get a buildup of heat in the vicinity of the phone because of the RF coming off that antenna, and RF on an off right off on the antenna is not a good thing. I mean, the microwaves are a frequency that you have with the Wi-Fi, and they're used in the microwave oven. So, I mean, basically you're cooking yourself in some way, shape, or form with RF.
Right, exactly. So what else do we got here? In the economy, the housing slump is still slumping, right?
Yeah, it's getting worse.
Yeah.
I think this has got to be the bottom.
You think so?
Yeah.
Why?
Because it's been dragging on too long. I mean, the bottom doesn't last for decades. It just got to hit a bottom at some point. It just started in 2008 and it's been bouncing around. It looks like a bottom to me. It's like been 3 years.
Well, one of the things that's happening is there's a lot of renting going on. So, you know, it's possible that the buying is being substituted for renters, but at the same time, there's still a lot of property inventory on the markets.
That's because the banks won't loan any money.
Right, they won't loan money. Plus, they're also throwing stuff on the market in the foreclosures. I mean, the foreclosure numbers are astounding.
Yeah, and they're not loaning any money for people to pick up the foreclosures. It's ridiculous. I mean, unless you're geared up with a huge down payment, and you've got perfect credit and all the rest of it, and you can move into one of these dogs, and mm-hmm. You'll be in good shape. But for people trying to refinance, or myself included, I haven't been able to get a refinance loan.
Right,
and it's ridiculous. I mean, you're just basically locked in. I mean, I could sell property, but I can't buy it.
Right.
So what kind of a market is that?
Yeah. So we put a chart together. You saw that basically we're at the lowest point of since the bubble burst in the housing, and it was kind of like, as you say, you know, bouncing along the bottom. We saw another report out today, the Case-Shiller 20 city and the 10 city. But the 20 city is at the lowest point on valuation that it's been since the top, you know, so we're even lower than the low was.
Right.
Which then goes to say, you know, or to look at, well, what was the benefit of the whole QE2, QE1? It was, part of it was to refresh the housing market.
Yeah, it seems more like it was just to give bankers money for bonuses because none of the money showed up in the public's hands.
Well, one of the things they said is that it was also for jobs. And if you did a calculation
what
on –
what jobs?
Well, if you, whatever jobs were created since QE2, if you calculate the amount of money that was spent
– oh, do you want fries with that job? Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Whatever it is, whatever the job is.
Yeah.
If you calculate the number of jobs and you divide it by the amount of money that was expended, the $650 billion on the QE2, each job creation cost $850,000.
Why don't they just give people the money?
I always said that. Just give everybody 50 grand and have a nice day.
Yeah, it would have been cheaper.
What's the point of all this otherwise? You know, just go in and just
can't
hand everybody
give it
a check.
Away as be welfare. Oh, you can't do that.
Right. So we gotta put it through
the economy. You can't give people money.
Yeah. Whatever. But you know what? We saw this bad news, and it doesn't seem to matter. The stocks are moving higher. And in fact, today there was probably – between inflation numbers and China numbers, slowing manufacturing, Japanese manufacturing slowed more than it was expected. The Fukushima situation is getting worse by the day. Now the radiation is at the level in the ground that it is at Chernobyl. And they've admitted that three or four...
It's about time they figured it out.
Yeah, that they're... So all this, and then you added the South Korea, that really... Oh, Singapore, excuse me, their production exports were down. And then you look at all the U.S. numbers, and then, you know, for the most part, European numbers, and... While we saw Germany have a good employment number, economic numbers are not coming in great, and a few companies are even guiding lower, but the markets are just playing all to the whole dollar situation. You know, it doesn't seem to matter. If stocks are moving up, they're moving up, and right now none of this matters. So that's, I guess, a good thing in a way, right, for those people invested alongside. But, you know, you got to wonder if and when any of this is going to change. I'll tell you something. The move today... There was three things that really was interesting. First of all, there was a lot of Asian movement on the whole idea that Greek was going to be in good shape. That spilled over to the U.S. It was end of month, and with a bad month, a lot of people plowed money into the markets, the managers, because they wanted to have, you know, a good end of month to bill for. And then on top of that, you wonder, though, this is now a wonder, the amount of movement you saw at the end of the day today in the last 15 minutes – last 15 minutes, the volume and the movement you saw.
Getting back to that scene again. Remember when we were seeing that a lot before?
You're wondering if there's maybe going to be a QE3 announcement or something. I mean, seriously. It's remarkable. Look at the charts I sent you.
We should. I'm looking at that, yeah. We should do a pool. I mean, whether it's going to be QE3 or not. Look at that chart. Yeah, it's wild.
Which one are you looking at? You're looking at the volume?
Or the volume one, yeah.
Yeah, the volume.
It just
something
jerks
very
straight up.
From about, I think it was 3:40, 20 minutes to 4 today.
Right at the very end of the day, it goes, it's a hockey stick.
Yeah, you had 130% increase in volume compared to the volume for the rest of the day up to that point.
Yeah, suspicious.
And you have to wonder what happened. Things went like, I mean, you know, like all the bells and all the whistles and all of the lights were kind of starting to flash all over the place like crazy. And I'm like, what in the world is going on here? And, you know, we saw also at the same time, the markets all of a sudden pick up. They were in a downtrend all throughout the whole day today. And then all of a sudden, they just go kaboom. You know, they pick up out of nowhere. And the speculation is there's a few things. Was there an end-of-month rebalance that all of a sudden everybody felt they had to do? We had almost a 0.5% move in about 10 minutes on the markets, on the S&P 500. News of Greece selling assets. Was it a fat finger? You know, because there was
finger.
The old fat finger.
Yeah, I forgot about that one.
The old fat finger. There was a lot of movement, and it was clearly futures and ETF-based. But what was really, I think, telling on this whole issue was that, you know, when you look at what happened the end of the day, when they clean up everything, there was – first of all, the volume kept on going to about 407. It just kept on growing because they couldn't keep up with it. And the other thing was there was a lot of trade imbalances at the end of the day. Like somebody just said, go, you know, with billions of dollars into the market. An amazing move, a truly amazing market move. And it was really very much like, you know, everything was just popping and it was very unexplained at this point. But the trade imbalances were interesting. Like there wasn't enough shares to be bought. They were still trying to buy, but the things weren't being sold or being sold and wasn't bought. A big trade imbalance at the end of the day on a lot of stocks. That's the old fat finger question.
Yeah, or they've got some new programming in their high-speed trading thing to keep the market propped up, and it's just going crazy. I don't know.
Usually when you see that, though, you'll see at the end of the day, the market starts sliding afterwards. You know, right after the market closes, it just kind of like...
Oh, right, right, yeah. No, it's not happening.
It didn't happen. No, it just stayed up a bit and just held in there. And usually you'll go down about 15 or 20 basis points right afterwards, kind of out of exhaustion, and they pull the trades. Didn't happen. So there was this gigantic volume move at the end of the day. So the volume looks like it's off the chart for the day, and it was only really... It would have been a light day, except for the fact the last 20 minutes, 15 minutes, even 10 minutes. So I thought that was very interesting. LinkedIn. Now, the LinkedIn shareholders are mad. I'm not sure why, but some of the big boys.
They're mad.
They're mad. They say they were pretty much ripped off.
You think?
They said the Wall Street priced it way too low for
too
Wall Street.
Too low?
Benefit. Yeah, they priced it way too low. Well,
I love the nerve of these guys.
Because if the stock was at 45 when it was IPO'd.
In other words, it went up. That's a bad thing. They can try it. Use an auction system. They don't have to subscribe to this method. I mean, you know, there's other ways of doing it.
Yeah, but then they don't know what they're going to get.
Yeah, probably. Well, that's true. So now they're complaining.
Now they're complaining. So the stock went to a high of 122. It backed off to about 81.50 now. It's below the price that it opened the day that the IPO opened. And there's been a lot of chatter about how this thing is going to cave in and just get just crushed down to 30s. So we'll see about that. I mean, there's clearly a lot of selling that came in right after that initial pop. A lot of people, I mean, you're talking about, what, about a 40% drop since the high, or a 30% drop. That's a big number in a week and a half.
Yeah. Am I still on the stock list?
Yeah, you're up.
I better
you're
be.
You're up on Yeah, that one and the other one. You got to make your money back on the other one. So what do you make of this iCloud?
Who cares?
Okay.
It's another winner, though, because, you know, Jobs, whatever he says, goes. And so everyone's going to be on board with this idea. It's going to be interesting. It should sink Netflix. Is it time to look at Netflix as a short? How's Netflix looking, by the way?
I don't think it's been down in 10 days. Seriously. Every time there's more competition, it's like the stock gets more and
That's
more
pissed
off.
That's because it's interpreted as what do you call it when you –
It's like an affirmation, right?
The affirmation. It's interpreted as affirmation that they're doing the right thing. Oh, my God.
Yeah. So Apple's coming out –
270.
Up
6.
Yeah. This keeps on going up.
This is ridiculous. This is going to be the world's greatest short.
I was on it the other day on Netflix on the online version. They have a lot more streaming these days than they had just only several months ago.
Yeah.
So they're really kicking it up.
Oh, yeah.
Which is good.
Yeah, no. Well, wow. Look at that thing.
Yeah. So Apple was up about 3% today. Now, Apple's move of 3% is helpful to markets. Apple's a very large cap, you know, the big cap, and it really does drag markets with it either direction. So the announcement of two things that happened. So Apple went up, I think, because of this announcement of the iCloud, although they've talked about this before. But the other thing that was interesting that really started the move on Apple was, again, one man's loss is another one's gain. Nokia comes out with an absolutely horrific projection on how much they're going to be off on their next the next number.
So I'm having lunch with a guy from Holland who is pretty savvy, and he keeps up with a lot of stuff I don't even bother with. He is like betting money that Microsoft's going to buy Nokia.
Ew. Really? Microsoft already did a deal with them. I mean, why?
Yeah, I know. Why buy the cow when the milk is free?
It's not even a cow. It's like a
pig.
Why
buy the dead cow when the milk is free?
I don't understand that. And why would they do such a thing? Because there's
I'm just
the
saying what he said. I'm not subscribing, but I did notice that people keep talking about Microsoft buying RIM for some unknown reason. So I looked at the market cap of both companies, and they're both way too high. But if you look at enterprise value, both companies are worth about $20 billion each. I mean, it's almost identical numbers. And I'm thinking, well, you know, $20 billion is a big – I mean, but if they spend $8.5 billion to buy Skype, and last quarter they did make $20 billion, coincidentally, almost on the money, in terms of income, it's possible.
Yeah, something's weird, though. The whole...
And they are preoccupied with what everybody else is doing, especially Apple. And Apple's off on this new, you know, jag, and Microsoft is, like, left in the... basically kicked to the curb. and they're going to stay that way. But they could, you know, probably rationalize in their own brains that they should buy, you know, do a deal with Nokia, do a merger or something, and at enterprise value, let's say.
I just don't see, you know, Microsoft is not a company, at least so far, that has really desired to be in the hardware business at all.
Well, they do make the mouse. That's hardware.
Okay, they make a mouse and a keyboard. Let's go there.
They make a keyboard. They used to make graphics card. They've dabbled in the hardware business. They make a reference design for a pad. I mean, so it's not like they're completely, you know, and they make the Xbox.
Yeah, but
which
when
is
it comes
a huge
to,
hardware operation.
But when it comes to this, when it comes to a phone or a computer, not a peripheral or an accessory. When it comes to a phone or computer, then they're going to be walking on, you know, their current customers' toes and having
oh, really?
To then
what customers
with
them. Are buying into WinPhone 7? What toes are they going to step on?
Well, theoretically. You know, no, because what are they going to do? They could come out with a tablet, and then I don't know.
There's no toes to step on. Nobody cares. I mean, they might as well just do that. I'm not buying it. I just said something he said. I thought it was an interesting idea when I looked at the numbers. It's like, well, if they could buy RIM, they could buy Nokia. That's all I came up with.
But buying RIM would be stupid also. I mean,
oh, absolutely. I think buying any phone company would be idiotic.
Right. I mean, they could easily, for the money, make their own, or just better yet, just sell their product with. I don't see the benefit. I just don't see it. I don't see them getting into that whole thing. And
let's go back 3 or 4 months. Would you see them buying Skype?
I don't see them buying Skype, but it has a better fit than a Nokia.
I don't see the fit at all.
The fit is for their corporate clients in particular.
Link already does what Skype does.
Yeah, but they're going to replace it with this.
Why?
Because they have. That's what they said. Because it's going to be a much better centralized telecommunication system for the various
they
things
don't even know how it works.
Well, that's possible. But it was a lot sexier. How's that?
Well,
it has some like, you know,
cachet.
It's in that Twitter kind of thing, and you know, it's all exciting. But anyway, consumer confidence is down, by the way, 6 month low of 60.8. Revised from a revised number of 66 in April, and the high gas prices and choppy job outlook. It's kind of interesting because this particular number, if you look at another chart I gave you, it contradicts the University of Michigan, which is interesting. Now, Tuesdays, generally speaking, that the Case-Shiller comes out. This is an oddball statement, but when the Case-Shiller number comes out in the morning, oftentimes you see markets in the last year or so, you know, not really taking it too well, that housing prices are down. And then whatever the conference board comes in at, it really doesn't matter. The markets just turn around and rally. I know it's a strange thing, but that's maybe because it's right ahead of the jobs numbers, usually on Friday. I don't know, but this is what we've seen, and it didn't fail today. Although I will say that for the most of the day, the markets were kind of trending lower, and it looked like at one point they were actually going to go negative. And then all of a sudden they just picked up at the end of the day. So maybe this didn't want to ruin the string of Tuesdays.
Well, I'm looking at the chart that shows the consumer conference board index up against the University of Michigan index, and one's going up and one's going down. So I suppose that would be a unusual situation, but I think it's happened before with these two.
It's not very usual that happens. They usually trend pretty well together. University of Michigan was out last week on Friday, and it was also lower than anticipated, by the way. But this one really took a sharp turn down. I mean, almost.
You mean the conference board?
Conference board.
Yeah, the CBI. Yeah.
Really? It's really.
It looks bad. I mean, it's heading to 60, and the Michigan one's headed to 80, or 75 right. At least. So it's a difference. But, well, let's see. Then when does it come out again? It comes out, what, every?
In a month.
Every month. So it'll be next month we'll
have
know.
To see what the story is. A couple other things before we get to the stocks that we talk about. I guess we could talk about in Germany. They announced a couple of days ago that they're going to close all their nuclear reactors by 2022.
Why?
Well, they said that the risks are not the risk payoff with the potential for what happened in Japan, which, by the way, I wasn't clear about the comparison between Japan and their nuclear reactors being on the coast and on a very active earthquake.
Being on a massive earthquake fault on the coast and run by boneheads.
Right. And then the whole Germany, which I just don't think they're in the center of any natural phenomena.
No. It's floods.
I can even think
of. I mean, you could have like a mild flood. And France, France is irked about all this because France isn't changing its attitude. France is extremely nuclear.
Germany's going to buy their right now they're going to be looking at France to buy their energy from. So, of course, France is happy.
Yeah.
You know, but now, so what are they going to do? So
Something always should be brought about French nukes, which is the French have done it right. I mean, the French are experts at certain things that can't be denied. And civil engineering is at the top. And they are the only country that all their nukes are standardized. And so you can, if you quit your job at one of them, you go work at another one. It's exactly the same inside. It's got the same control room. They're not state of the art, but they're all exactly the same, as opposed to all the ones we have in the U.S., which are all custom made by General Electric, each one being totally different than the other one. So if you wanted to get a job in one of these as an operator, you'd have to be retrained at each place. And you wouldn't have the same feel for it because, you know, it's a different operation. It's always baffled me why this never is discussed.
Well, is it also true then that if something happens that is a major breakdown in one of the French reactors, that the potential is that many of the others will have the same situation?
Yeah, but then they could correct it in advance. It's like if you have a bad hard disk, you know, and it's all from the same batch, you can take action.
Right.
But if they're all totally different, you don't know what's going to happen anywhere. And they're also conservative designs. They're not over the top trying to do, you know, anything fancy.
Right. But, you know, what happened is now the speculation is, well, what are they going to replace this with? We're talking about a lot of energy here, right?
Yeah, wind.
So wind and solar. Solar's went straight up. Even though there was an announcement today also, or yesterday, that Germany's going to cut back on their supplements and their payments to supplement the solar energy markets. Even so, solar companies went, you know, nicely up today. So
do we have any solar in any of our stocks? I don't know.
Well, we had GT Solar I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, which I still like. We were in and out of it. But GT Solar is definitely one of the ones I like. They make many of remember I mentioned that they're the company that does they make the – like an AMAT for the solar industry. Actually, AMAT also does some stuff for the solar industry. But they make the machines that make the photovoltaic cells and the parts and the things also for LEDs. And they make sapphire burners and ovens and things of that nature for the LED market. So they have a lot of orders came in. It looked really good. But the stock sank 2 days after earnings pretty hard. But we're looking to get back into it now because it started to pop up a little bit again. And now it looks like it could be clearing some of the sellers that wanted to just move out after the earnings came out. It looks like there's an opportunity to possibly move back in. We can put that on the list today. But also in Germany, I guess the only thing that is happening is that horrible this E. coli outbreak. Did you see this?
Actually, I missed that story.
So there's like 16 dead, 1,000 people are sick, 400 are suffering severe and potential fatal symptoms. But the scientists that are studying this are still totally baffled by
what caused this.
And that's a pretty big outbreak. This is substantial.
Yeah, it's not
good. This isn't just Jack in the Box in, you know, Washington or whatever it was. This is, 1,000 people sick and 4. I mean, that's a lot of people. 16 people dead from E. coli. That's pretty nasty.
Yeah. Very interesting. Got to follow that.
All the horrible news. You want to look at the stocks?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right. No, we always mention that the stocks that we talk about here are just for purposes of discussion. And if you're going to buy or sell something, it's not recommended by us, by the way. We're just talking about it. And you have to seek competent financial advice, utilize all the research that you can, and be aware that we are not making an offer or a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. This is all in the spirit of hopefully having some fun and who knows, maybe make some money along the way. But we're not recommending anything.
So we got, I see my LinkedIn is finally perked up.
Yeah, perked down, which is your short, which
perked down.
Perked
down, it's a short. And let's see, I'm looking at the ones see if we got any dogs on here. Chesapeake Utilities has done nothing. Kamak Energy, the famous Nigerian oil play. Looks like it's getting down to the point where it looks like it's a good time to buy in.
Yeah, it's, it's getting close to that dollar point, $1.42.
What else I got here? ARM is up and Intel's down, and Intel's down a lot. That's interesting. Of course, everyone's going, you know, there should be something happening after next week because or there's Computex show. It just started. And that will be over in about a week, and all these new designs and ideas will be out and about, and be a lot of publicity going around. We'll see what happens.
There's a lot of gray on this chart. Do you notice that? A lot of yours picks are.
That's because mine hang in there. They don't move enough to get bounced. Yours are always like radically moving around.
Alexion did stop out this last week, I guess it was. So we have a 26% gain on that. But some of the companies are still kind of cruising along. You know, Adobe's up 30%. Albemarle, the company that makes the chemicals, is doing very nicely.
I think that's the pick of the chart here.
That was great.
And MetroPCS was I don't know when you suggested it. I was thinking about it when you said it. I said I should just buy some of this because, you know, your rationale was right on the money. And there's a MetroPCS store down the street from me, and it's packed with people always. It's packed always to the gills with people.
Well, we're going to recommend we're not recommending, but we're going to talk about two different stocks, maybe three. But I finally put Crocs on here, talking about it so much.
Oh, yeah.
It's done so nicely.
The shoes.
And they have a new shoe called the Chameleon.
Oh, brother.
It's for kids. It changes color.
Colors, I mean, obviously.
Yeah, how nice is that? How exciting.
MLC.
And also Bridgepoint Education. Now, here's something very interesting. There's a couple of areas in particular, too. The solars and the for-profit education stocks.
For-profit for education is huge.
Yep, and it's a big problem because the solar, they're very similar in that the solars rely on a lot of government help and offsets around the world to, you know, make sure that they're installed, et cetera, as a clean energy, green energy. And the for-profits also get a lot of subsidies. And one of the things that's happening this week, or maybe even, I guess, next week, there's going to be a final legislation drafted about some of these schools who actually have gone out and have squandered, I guess, government money and done very bad recruiting policies and practices and brought in people, but are now these people that maybe didn't graduate are just saddled with incredible amounts of loans. Okay? So there's something going on there. Bridgepoint, it's a very, very highly shorted stock. About 40% of the float is short.
Hmm.
One of the highest out there. And so you always got to wonder about that. What, you know, are they smart or you have an opportunity for a short squeeze?
Yeah.
The stock is at a point, though, that it is sitting very nicely at a point that any higher, a little bit higher than this, it's going to get a big short squeeze. And if something comes out of those meetings that aren't as harsh as the shorts have hoped for, this thing has a real opportunity to, you know, really blast up. The earnings came in great recently. I've talked to the company a few times trying to understand what's going on, why is it going on, you know, why is it nobody likes this company with the great earnings that it has and the history it has. And
why is it?
They were kind of baffled.
Oh, that's bull crap.
Yeah, well,
knows why they're hated.
Yeah, well, but they're making money, and the question is going to be is how much are they – reliant on the government, and how much did they abuse that, any of these companies? And what kind of laws are going to come over?
Stock's already doubled.
Yeah. We've had it for a little while. We like the stock. But look where it's sitting. If you're looking at a long enough chart, the weekly chart, you know, sitting at a really good point that there's not much resistance on the upside.
Let's see what this looks like. It looks like a roller coaster. Let's see. Market cap $1.2 billion.
You got to remember that next week is going to be a point
nice
that
nice peg.
What's the peg on this?
0.49.
Yeah. Well, that's because the stock is they have good earnings and they're just not respected. So it realizes you look at this.
This has to be looked into.
Well, it's because the whole industry is not respected. And they're the target of
you know, a friend of mine is like big into this. I mean, he's like a CEO of a company that buys and sells colleges, and you know, private schools. Mm-hmm. And he just sees it as the biggest thing. He's actually quit doing that, and he moved into which he thinks is the next level of this sort of thing, which is technical institutes.
So for like, you know, instead of going to a full-blown college, you're doing more of a
like a
learning experience
kind of thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there's apparently a lot of them, and they're all over the place. They teach you to drive trucks and weld and all the other stuff. And I think he might be onto something, because there is a movement afoot, which I'll probably discuss on the No Agenda show on Thursday for anyone out there who likes to listen to political crap. I think there's a movement afoot to sink the classic public education institutions at the college level, based on the kind of propaganda memes I'm starting to pick up on. And I just noticed this the last couple of days, and I picked up on it with a couple of clips I pulled from some TV shows. And then you have a chart here showing the cost of an education at the various schools and what you can expect to get in 30 years as a payback, which I thought was kind of interesting.
It's an expensive proposition.
So nowadays, when I went to the University of California, Berkeley, which is where I went, I don't remember pay. I mean, I worked my way through school. I worked summer jobs, and I could get through, and I think my parents helped me a little bit. But I wasn't paying this kind of money. I wasn't paying $110,000, almost $120,000 a year, which is like, what, $40,000 to go to school at a state-run college, which was the idea was University of California, Berkeley, was for the local – for kids in California to go get a good education for not a lot of money. They were also more highly rated than they are today, too, which is it's the irony of the whole thing. Now they're like the 20th best school or 30th. They were like number one at one point in the country. Mm. And then they have a 30-year on this little chart of yours, which is quite interesting. You should link to it on.
We'll put all these charts up that
DH
we had
Unplugged.
From today.
It shows that 30-year net income. In other words, over 30 years, you can expect to make back on your $110,000 investment $101.167 million, which is a 12.9% ROI. But if you do that calculation on that, it's less than $40,000 a year, which seems like and that's the highest on this list.
Right.
I mean, some of these schools, you're coming out of there for the rest of your life making $35,000 or so, according to the averages. It doesn't sound like a good deal.
Right. No, it's not. It's definitely not. And I agree with you. When I think over the last couple of years, 3 years, the idea of an apprenticeship concept where you learn a trade, and you learn a trade to actually at a much lower cost. That's something that you could utilize, and it's something that's going to be, you know, fit you at least, and you could have at all levels. I mean, I think that's been, for whatever reason, that's been something that's been, you know, growing in popularity. Yep.
Well, I have some thoughts on it, but it's for another moment. Yep. So, okay, back to the list, the stocks.
Yeah. So anyway, those are the two. I mean, right now we'll see how this whole thing plays out with regard to, in theory, we should see if this does settle out with Greece and all that, a lot of the overhang from the risk issues will settle out a bit. You know, you'll probably see, you know, gold start to, you know, maybe start slowing down. Inflation has been down over here. It's been down over there. They're tamping it down in China. You know, you would think that some of these inflation plays will start to settle out a little bit and not get as excited as they've been. But we'll see. Oil should, you know, at least start to get a little more reasonable again in terms of price. Inventories are still pretty high on oil, even though gasoline use is up. So, I mean, the next couple of weeks is going to be really interesting because, you know, even though there's all this negative news, the markets don't have totally, you know, looked the other way. So one of the things I will tell you that we did notice is that when it comes to the short interest on the S&P 500, the highest short interest right now, or the growing short interest, has been both in the industrials and the consumer discretionary. Hmm. There's you know, like the Harley Davidsons of the world and some of the Sears, et cetera. A lot of these companies are being shorted pretty well. And that's an interesting sign of what their belief is from the short side of the equation, that the consumer discretionary is really going to start rolling over.
Interesting.
But it hasn't happened yet.
No.
That's usually the first to roll over during a downturn, of course. But we'll see. You know, it's all based on the jobs numbers on Friday. We're going to see the NFP payroll numbers, and I think they're looking for about 160,000 or so, 170,000 in new jobs created, and probably close to somewhere around about a 9% unemployment rate. That's kind of the target right now with what we're seeing from most people. But there's clearly a slowdown, so we'll see how that plays out. And there's a lot more firings that we noticed being headlined, you know, in the news right now. So that's going to be the next week's excitement.
All right. Well, we'll talk on Tuesday, it looks like, and see what happens between now and then. I'm not expecting much.
Well, I would tend to agree there's a lot of overhang right now. But, you know, when you get the juices going of the investors and it starts popping, they just start plowing money in. It's a new month, so they, you know, maybe we'll – I don't know. We'll see.
Right.
We'll see.
June boon. I don't know.
Yeah. Invest in June and be a buffoon.
Yeah.
But you can see all these things by simply going over to DH Unplugged, and you can actually click on the link that says weekly stocks ideas, and it will bring up a Google spreadsheet with all the live data, the performance of since we bought it, you know, what it's doing, what our ideas were, et cetera, to see how these all play out.
All right. Until next week. See you then.
Okay. Adios.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.